His Son and His Word continue to prove themselves to be true. Amen. Over and over again. I like, if you're like me, you like the sentiment of certain songs. And there's a country song that I like all kinds of music, but there's a country song that I really like the sentiment to this song. You probably heard of him, Montgomery Gentry, and it's just a neat song, and I want to read part of this to you. I want to use this to jump into the lesson this morning. It says, there's a story that my daddy tells religiously. And some of you know this song. You don't need to sing it. I'll just read it. There's a story that my daddy tells religiously, like clockwork, every time he sees an opening in a conversation about the way things used to be. I just roll my eyes and make a beeline for the door. I'd always end up starry-eyed and cross-legged on the floor, hanging on to every word. Man, the things I heard. It was harder times and longer days. 5 miles to school, uphill both ways. We were cane switch raised and dirt floor poor. Of course, that was back before the war. Yeah, your uncle and I made quite a pair, flying F-15s through hostile air. He went down, but they missed me by a hair. He'd always stop right there and say, "That's something to be proud of. That's a life you can hang your hat on." I don't want to read the whole thing, but he goes on in this song and he talks about this young man growing up and the choices he made. Some of those choices were not the choices that mom and dad wanted him to make. And looking back after he had children and had a job and was raising his family, he said this, "Dad, I wonder if I ever let you down. If you're ashamed how I turned out." Well, he lowered his voice and he raised his brow and said, "Let me tell you right now, that's something to be proud of. That's a life you can hang your hat on. No need to make a million. Just be thankful to be working. If you're doing what you're able, putting food there on the table, and providing for the family that you love, that's something to be proud of." I really like that song, especially the phrase where he says, "That's a life you can hang your hat on." I've titled my lesson this morning that very phrase. What is a life you can hang your hat on? According to the biblical witness, of course, what is a life that we would say is a meaningful life? We all ask sometimes throughout our life, am I living according to my purpose? Am I living how I should live? Am I living a life that pleases God? Am I living a life that I could say in conclusion, that's a life you can hang your hat on? I want you to think about that this morning, because this is the topic of our lesson. We're going to do a little something different this morning. We're going to spend some time in the Old Testament. There's a lot of books that will answer this. I think the Bible does for us. But I want us to go back to Ecclesiastes. We know that Scripture teaches us that those things that were written beforehand, speaking of the Old Covenant, were written for our instruction, so we still can learn today from the Old Covenant. Now we know, and we need to keep this in mind, especially as we go through Ecclesiastes. Some of you here know the book very well. Some of you don't. But if you don't understand it in the context of Scripture, and where we are now as God's people under the new covenant in Jesus Christ, it is a very, very dark book. Very depressing, really. And you'll see that. And the preacher is going to paint this picture, not me, the preacher who wrote the book. He is going to paint this picture of this kind of a life. It's a real downer for a while, but there is a moment where he's going to bring out light. There is light. There is a comparison. There is a contrast in this book of negative ideas and positive. It just seems like there's so many negatives. I think it's a sermon that's preached just as I go through this. It's one that actually in the Hebrew language called the assembly together. So the translation of preacher, I think, is a good one. Possibly could be teacher. But the one that gathers the assembly to teach them what a meaningful life really is. Now, I didn't realize this until this last week, but at the Feast of Tabernacles, this was one of the messages that was read every year. As God's people would come together for, 7 days or so, and they would remember their history in the wilderness. As their relatives left Egypt and they wandered in the wilderness, they dwelled in tents, God tabernacled in the middle of them. They would remember that, and this was one of the books that was written, or that was read to them every year in October. The author, of course, is debated, as oftentimes they are. Those of you who have read this know that many believe it was Solomon. Many don't, and you can research this on your own. I think there is some argument to both views. Some say it's Solomon because he begins in chapter 1:1, the words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. One of the key thoughts that he brings out is wisdom. Wisdom versus foolishness. This is in the wisdom literature. So it deals with wisdom. We know Solomon, that was a key aspect to his life, if it was him. Jewish tradition does say Solomon's the author. But if you don't agree with that is okay. The theme of the book is, I think, man's search for meaning. Anybody here not searching for meaning in life? Understanding what your purpose in life is? We see a lot of people today that don't live according to their purpose in life. They may question what it is, but they don't know their purpose. Well, the preacher, what he does is he searches for meaning in life in all these areas. And we're going to look at the first two chapters this morning, to find out what is meaningful in life, to find out what is the purpose of life. And one of the things he says, is, which is a key phrase, is vanity of vanities. His conclusion is that life seems meaningless. Now, if you view life, as he says, under the sun, and that is your focus, life does seem to be vanity of vanities, futile, worthless, senseless, striving, as he will say, after the wind. The preacher will answer, I think, if I've broken it down into 5 sermons, and the first sermon is chapter 1 and 2. And he preaches that if your life again is lived under the sun, that is a key phrase. In other words, if you care only about the material world, if your life is consumed with material things, if your life is consumed with the pleasures of men, well, what are the pleasures of men? There's many, and he's going to list them in chapter 2, many of them that he sought after. If that is your focus, then he says life is meaningless. But here's the point that I want to bring out. Here's what I want us to see in a nutshell. If you live your life for God, if you seek God, if you seek His way, we could say if you live your life above the sun rather than under the sun, then that is a life that you can hang your hat on. That is a life of meaning. That is a life of purpose. And we know it's a struggle. It was a struggle back then. It's a struggle today. But we also know under the new covenant, Paul has said, if then you have been raised up with Christ, keep seeking continually, is the thought, the things that are above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Paul will sum that up too. Is there an advantage? Is there a profit or meaning in life in the work that we find ourselves doing? Look at chapter 1. And I'm going to read through much of this. I'm going to have to paraphrase some of it, kind of summarize some of it for you. The words of the preacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem, vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What advantage does man have in all the work in which he does? Where? Notice, under the sun. Generation goes, generation comes, but the earth, he says, remains forever. Now that's a key question through the book. Briefly, let's look at a few other places it's mentioned. Notice chapter 3, verse 9. Chapter 3, verse 9. What profit is there to the worker from that in which he toils? Notice verse 19. For the fate of the sons of men and the fate of beasts is the same. And this is one of the perplexing issues that he is dealing with. That no matter how wise he is, all he says go to the same place. So if I live in wisdom and I toil all my life in wisdom, and someone over here toils all their life live in foolishness, lacking wisdom throughout, we all go to the same place. That was one of the struggles that he had. The fate of the sons of men, the fate of beasts, the fate of everyone is the same. As one dies, so dies the other. Indeed, they all have the same breath, and there is no advantage for man over beasts, for all is vanity. So, beasts and man, whether you're wise, whether you're foolish, all go to the same place. And he covers that throughout this book. Notice chapter 5, verse 15 and 16. He's going to say, as man or as he had come naked from his mother's womb, so will he return as he came. He will take nothing from the fruit of his labor that he can carry in his hand. It's negative, but hang in there. And this also is a grievous evil, he concludes. Exactly as a man is born, thus he will die. So what is the advantage to him who toils, he says, for the wind? Chapter 6 and verse 8. For what advantage does the wise man have over the fool? What advantage does the poor man have knowing how to walk before the living? In chapter 10. There are other places, but I just want to make this point. Chapter 10, verse 10. Here is one of the positive ideas he will draw out. If the axe is dull and he does not sharpen its edge, then he must exert more strength. Wisdom has the advantage of giving success. Now he says it has the advantage. It doesn't mean it will always give success. But this is one of the positive thoughts that the preacher will conclude as he brings out his message. Also, you'll notice the phrase under the sun again. That's going to be found 30 times, 29, 30 times, depending on your translation. This is universal. Everybody has experienced somewhat what it means to live life under the sun. We're all under the sun. And here he is painting this very, very dark picture. But again, he's going to eventually bring light. Verses 5 through 7, he's going to talk about three things. Nothing is new. He's going to say this: the sun rises, the rivers, or the winds blow, and the rivers flow. And the ocean never gets too full. And then he says in verse 8, wrapping it up, all things are wearisome. Man is not able to tell it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing. You can relate to this, church. Nor is the ear filled with hearing. Listen to what he says. He concludes that fulfillment in this life will not come. That's the problem with life under the sun. We could search for a million years. There is nothing under the sun in this life and world that will bring us lasting fulfillment. Nothing, he concludes. And that's part of the struggle that we face. The monotony of life. That man will not find all the answers to life. And he's a pretty wise king. Preacher, he understands a lot. We won't understand everything. We don't understand all the complexities of life. And he writes, what, possibly over a 3,000, maybe 3,000 years ago? He says, nothing is new, verses 9 and 10 and verse 11. Notice what he says. And he's going to share two things that men are plagued with. There is no remembrance of earlier things. Now, there are some things in this life worth remembering. There are deeds that men have done, and there are deeds that people have done. We'd say, that's really not worth remembering, is it? But he says there's no remembrance of earlier things, and also of their later things which will occur. There will be for them no remembrance among those who will come later or after them. The inability to accomplish, number one, anything worthwhile and lasting. And then number two, the memory of his efforts are forgotten. The actual wording is memorable deeds are forgotten. Memorable things. So he spends his time and his life here figuring out, what is this all life about? What is the meaningful life? And so he goes into verse 12 and following through verse 14 of futility of work under the sun and of wisdom. He said, I, the preacher, have been king over Israel and Jerusalem. I set my mind, notice where he set his mind, to seek and explore by wisdom concerning all that has been done under heaven. I haven't set my mind to know all that has been done under heaven. He did. It is, notice, a grievous task, which God has given to the sons of men to be afflicted with. Key verse 14. I have seen all the works which have been done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and striving after the wind. He is earnestly seeking after this meaningful life. The problems and burdens and the questions of life are not just his. They're not optional. They're all of ours. Every generation, man wants to know. Even C.S. Lewis once himself said in one of his books, all men must deal with their going hence. And every man tries to. Every man questions the meaning of life and seeking to know and to figure it all out. And he says life under the sun is vanity of vanities. And he's going to list all the vain things that charm us most in a moment. But here he says all that man has done under the sun. I've got a list. If you're interested, I'll make a copy. I'm not going to go through all these verses. But I found 18 places or 18 things that are the vain things in Ecclesiastes. Let's just read in a couple places. One is of competition. Go to chapter 4, verse 4. I have seen that every labor and every skill which is done is the result of rivalry between a man and his neighbor. This too is vanity and striving after the wind. Notice what he says. Obviously, he will bring out riches. He was an extremely wealthy king. Chapter 4, verse 7 and 8. Then I looked again at vanity under the sun. There was a certain man without a dependent, having neither a son nor a brother. Yet there was no end to all his labor. He worked, 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 and then worked. Indeed, his eyes were not satisfied with riches. And he never asked, and for whom am I laboring and depriving myself of pleasure? This too is vanity. It's a grievous task. It's difficult. I've met some extremely wealthy people. I have a friend in California that is, and I remember hearing him say this very thing, that when you thought you had enough and you thought this would be enough, it never is. You're never satisfied with it. So the preacher says that is vanity. How about chapter 4, verse 16? This is the last place we'll look, where he says, trying to please everybody, there is no end to all the people, to all who were before them, and even the ones who will come later will not be happy with him. For this too is vanity. Notice, it's vain in striving after the wind. He will talk about the failure of properly using wealth, being able to use your words masterfully, associating with those who do not think soberly about life. Vanity of vanities. He says, it is vain. But then he says another thing that is a common phrase throughout, where he says, striving after the wind. Consider the thought. I was thinking about how we could illustrate this, and I thought this would be a great teaching point for us parents and our children one day. Next time there's a major wind or just a wind outside and we have nothing to do, let's get an empty jar with a lid and say, let's go play a game. We're going to go strive to catch the wind. We'll take that jar out there and we'll do everything we can in our power to capture the wind in that jar or in that empty coffee can. You know what the outcome is. Pretty silly. Kind of senseless, isn't it? But there's a valuable lesson in that that he's making. That the life that is lived under the sun is no different than striving after the wind. It is as pointless, the preacher says, as you taking the jar and trying to put it in it. Vanity of vanities. All is vanity, he says, striving after the wind. For Jesus said, what does it profit a man? You know the rest of it. If he gains the whole world, everything becomes yours. And yet he forfeits his soul. For he says, what will a man give in exchange for his soul? Life without God is as pointless to the preacher as bottling up the wind, as striving after the wind. Verse 15, what is crooked can't be straightened. Hang with me. What is lacking cannot be counted. I said of myself, behold, I've magnified, increased in wisdom more than all who were over Jerusalem before me. My mind has observed a wealth of wisdom and knowledge. And I set my mind to know wisdom, to know madness and folly. And I realized this too was striving after the wind, because notice, in much wisdom, there's much grief. And increasing knowledge results in increasing pain. Can't straighten what God has meant. That's his wisdom. Isn't this true? Whatever God has set up, church, our culture can do everything it wants. Generation comes and goes and tries to straighten what God's meant. And you know what? They're wasting their time. You aren't going to do it. You aren't going to change what's moral and what's not. You're not going to change death. As much as the scientists strive to come up with a pill that will grow your arm back when it's amputated, they won't succeed. As long as they try to find a pill that'll raise you from the dead, it's bent. Oh, they may give you a little bit extra life or time, which is nothing in the scope of history. You cannot straighten what God has been. So the preacher searches all this out, and you know what he can conclude? I've been there, done that. There is nothing that I have not experienced at the pleasures of men under the sun. And he learns through extreme pain, because with wisdom and the knowledge that he says comes great pain. He learns ignorance, I think, as they say, is bliss. Some things in this evil world, I think, are better off unknown. He knew that. It's not good to know everything. It really isn't. That's why you don't teach your children everything you know. Not all the knowledge in the world is good to accumulate. It can be very painful for you and I know. Just turn on the television. You understand the pain of knowledge. And sometimes what we don't know won't affect us as much. I think that's true. You know, this is just my observation, but we seem to be a more, and I don't mean you personally per se, but people, a lot of people that I'm around in the world, as I observe, as you observe, we seem to be more informed by media today than ever before, and yet we seem to be more confused. But all the knowledge is there. We're confused, more informed by media today, and yet what I'm hearing is far less confidence in God and who He is and the plan and the purpose for life and meaning of life. People are lacking confidence in what is true and what is not. And perhaps it's because what much of the world sees as important, and that is what the preacher will conclude as madness, as striving after the wind. Vanity of vanities. all is vanity. And then he goes on, chapter 2, his next point in chapter 2 will be of pleasure. And he seeks all the deceptive pleasures. 1 John 2:16 and 17, lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, boastful pride of life, deceptive pleasures, treasures, you've heard me say this before, and measures. They're deceiving. They're of the world. Verse 1, I said of myself, come now, I'll test you with pleasure. We want to be pleased, don't we? We want to enjoy, so enjoy yourself. Behold, this too was futility. I said of laughter, it's madness. Of pleasure, what does it accomplish? I explored with my mind how to stimulate my body with wine, while my mind was guiding me wisely, how to take hold of folly until I could see what good there is for the sons of men to do under heaven the few years of their lives. So I enlarged my works. Listen to these pleasurable things. Built houses for myself, planted vineyards, made gardens and parks for myself. I planted them in all kinds of fruit trees. I made ponds of water for myself, which to irrigate the forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves. I've had homeborn slaves. I possessed flocks and herds larger than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. Also, I collected for myself silver and gold, the treasures of kings and provinces. I provided for myself male and female singers and the pleasures of men, many concubines. Just put next to that, many lovers. Then I became great and increased more than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. My wisdom stood by me. And all that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure. For my heart was pleased. This was a glimmer of good, because all my labor, and this was my reward, all of my labor. Sensual pleasures. He lists nine categories there. Can you think of any others? If this was Solomon, remember 1 Kings 11:3, 700 wives, 300 concubines? And he had more, all the wisdom in the world. He had more wealth than anybody of his generation, at least. But notice his conclusion out of all of that. The pleasures under the sun. I considered, verse 11, all the activities which my hands had done, the labor which I had exerted. Behold, all was vanity, striving after the wind. And notice he says, no profit under the sun. So he continues on seeking madness, seeking wisdom, all these things, verse 12. So I considered wisdom, madness, and folly. For what will the man do who will come after the king except what has already been done? I saw that wisdom excels. Here's some light. Folly is light excels darkness. Wisdom is better, right? Verse 14, the wise man's eyes are in his head and the fool walks in darkness, yet I know that one fate befalls them both. And so he's upset, verse 17. I hated life for the work which has been done under the sun. It was grievous to me because everything is futility, he says, and striving after the wind. Wisdom is better than being a fool, is what he concludes here. Because wisdom sees and can choose and tend to do the right thing. Another thing he's going to bring out, verse 18 through 21, is how in wisdom you labor, but then you have to give what you labor and earn to somebody who may not have labored as you have. Maybe you have a son who is foolish. And you've labored in wisdom, and you've got to give him your estate. He says, this is vanity. It'd have been better off not to leave anything for the foolish son. And who was Solomon's if he was the preacher? After Solomon passed on, gains the inheritance, Rehoboam, what was he like? We know all about him. Foolish. And that's what he covers on through verse 21. But hang in here, verse 22. For what, and we're almost through, what does the man get in all his labor and his striving with which he labors under the sun? Because all his days task is painful and grievous. Even at night his mind doesn't rest. Anybody been there? You're so consumed with what's going on in life, what you can't control. All the things under the sun, and so my mind is racing. I can't sleep. This is vanity, he concludes. There is nothing better, verse 24, than a man eat and drink and tell himself, here's a transition point, that is, labor is good. So he's painted this picture of under the sun, under the sun, futile vanity. And now he's going to change. This also I have seen, that it is from the hand of God. Verse 25. For who can eat? Good question. And who can have enjoyment without him? He says, who can eat? And who can have enjoyment without God? For to a person who is good in his sight, he has given wisdom and knowledge and joy, while to the sinner he has given the task of gathering, collecting, so that he may give to the one who is good in God's sight. This too is vanity and striving after wind. But notice the transition of life under the sun and now life above the sun. Viewing life and enjoying life because of God. First thing I want to bring out in conclusion, 3 points. Number one, everything we do for God brings us fulfillment. And it's the simple little things. It's the little things. But our life in Christ, our life in God, is a meaningful and purposeful life. Avon Malone said of the other life, without God, life is reduced to paychecks, weekends, and cheap thrills. That's life under the sun. That's the vain life. Number two, and I think this is profound, and you'll see this throughout the book. Live day to day in the moment with God. That's good wisdom, glorifying Him in the simple, ordinary thing. Who can eat? Who can drink? Who has enjoyment outside of God? Nobody. Because that's where our joy is. In the moment with God, glorifying Him in the simple, ordinary things. Last point. Our last point is not the point, it's actually a question. Back to the theme. Are we living a life that we can hang our hat on? I want you to think through this book, and I want you to think of your life now under the new covenant in Jesus. Because Colossians 2:3, Paul says, all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge, far more than the wise king. All the treasures of God's wisdom and knowledge are found in Jesus. In Jesus Christ, that's what we have. When you came to Him by faith, when you were buried with Him in the waters of baptism, you were united in the likeness of His death and the likeness of His resurrection. You won't find that any other place. And then Jesus in John 10:10, He said, I came that you may have life and may have it more abundantly. And that's life now, on into eternity. Do you want abundant, full life? The meaningful life that you can hang your hat on. And that's life found in Jesus Christ. That's a life that we live for God. And that's why He said, Matthew 6:19 and 21, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy. You know it, where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroy. And thieves don't break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Let God and Jesus be your treasure today. That's the lesson this morning. Ken is going to lead us in an invitation song. I'm going to ask that you stand as we sing. If you need prayers this morning, if you have made the decision this morning that you're ready to put on Jesus as your Lord and Savior in baptism, this is that opportunity to do that. If you need prayers, we ask that you come forward as well as we stand, as we sing the invitation song. Would you come?